Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Frontside Podcast, episode 39. I'm Charles Lowell. I'm here with a great panel. We're going to be covering a very interesting, very hot topic for you today. The topic is going to be junior developers and integrating them into your organization. And with me, I've got Alex and Lydia and Stephanie. So why don't you guys just introduce yourself? Alex?
Hey, I'm Alex Ford. I'm a developer at the Frontside. I've been here almost a year and a half now, which is crazy to think about. But I started as a junior and would like to think of myself as an intermediate dev today.
Hi, so I'm Stephanie Riera, and I'm also a developer here at the Frontside, and I have been here for 3 months now.
And I'm Lydia Guarino. I am now a Frontside alum. I work for a company called Data.World. And I started at the Frontside as also kind of a between junior and mid-level developer. And now I would consider myself a solid mid-level developer.
Yep. And but you guys all have the kind of the common thread that you all went to a code bootcamp and you did not come from a straight like computer science background, which is crazy to me when I think about it, because if you would have told me that 2 years ago or 3 years ago that half of our staff, this large percentage of our staff would be comprised of, you know, people who essentially came from bootstrap code school graduates, I would have been like, you're completely crazy. But it's been a really, really fantastic experience for us. And something that's, been really successful. And, you know, so it definitely merits a conversation.
Yeah, I think this is a really hot topic right now because, there's a lot of chatter on the internet about, various people's experiences hiring junior developers, various businesses wondering how they can hire junior developers. And there's also been like a huge proliferation of all of these schools because it is now clear that there's a market for offering alternative on-ramps into development through these kinds of schools. And I think it is just an important topic for us to address, since so many of us went through it and have actually had positive experiences coming out of it. And I think it would be useful to our audience to hear some of the things that we pulled out as being important for companies to consider, why companies should even be interested in hiring junior developers, and then what junior developers can do to make sure that they're setting themselves up for success.
Yeah. I think it could be scary on both ends. I haven't experienced it as someone coming out of a code school, but I have certainly experienced it as someone who's running a business. It's a scary prospect being like, I'm going to hire this person who is junior to begin with and doesn't, have like come from the stereotypical background. And there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of doubt that comes with that. And it's, I think it's important to talk about that it actually can work out and there can be like a happy path that leads to a happy ending.
Yeah. So I think one of the first things that would be important to talk about is just why companies should even entertain this as an option. Like what are even the benefits, or why is this a current problem? And I think an obvious answer is that we have a huge supply and demand deficit right now.
That goes without saying. I mean, we've been trying to hire developers. We're constantly hiring developers, and we're not the only people, right? I mean, it's just like you go to a meetup and they usually have this thing like who's looking for a job and who's offering a job. And I mean, what is it like 9 to 1, it feels like, or maybe like 99 to 1 sometimes. And sometimes I don't see anybody from the crowd of like, I'm looking for a job. Go up, like the demand is just voracious. Like there's a hunger for developers that's just not being met.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing that I like to highlight when having this type of conversation with people is that the demand is actually usually for senior developers.
That's true.
Usually what people are setting out to hire is they want to fill that role with someone that does have the experience, that does have the ability to come in, not require a whole lot of training or oversight and be able to like dive in and work on their own. But we're seeing that, people are leaving those recs open for 6 months, 9 months, a year, 2 years.
Right.
There's probably someone on your, there's probably a position open on your team right now for a senior developer that's just not being filled by anyone right now.
Mm-hmm. And life would be wonderful if, like, everything were a known quantity, right? Someone who's a senior developer, they're a known quantity. And it would just be so great if, like, you never had to take any risk or you never had to do, you know, make any stretch. And everything was, you know, completely and totally a known quantity. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, that's not the way it is.
So then why do we hire a junior developer? What do you get out of it?
Are you asking me?
Well, I'm actually asking Lydia because she's kind of coined something and I kind of want her to talk about that.
thanks for the setup, man. I'm a big fan of the term developer and or developer plus, which is more specific to boot camp grads than it is necessarily to like the pool of junior developers in general. But I think it's an interesting part of the equation that people sort of gloss over a little bit, that a lot of the people that are coming through boot camps are career changers. They're people that probably have a degree in something else. They're people that have work experience, real work experience, doing something else perhaps, or something even related. I know Alex and I both have backgrounds in things that are translate fairly well to software development, even though that's not, you know, what our formal education was in. I guess actually, Alex, you're a special case. I'll let you talk about that in a minute.
Somewhat formal, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, if you think about how the dynamics of your team might change by integrating somebody that is both learning how to navigate software development, but also is coming in with an established skill set like marketing or like design or engineering of some other vertical, that person is going to be able to offer insights that you're not going to get from, you know, a straight CS grad team. And the innovation that has come out of the teams that I've seen when they've incorporated somebody that has gone through a boot camp or has come from a different industry, even if they didn't go through a boot camp specifically, but have taken, you know, another alternative on-ramp, has been really interesting to see. And the communication on the teams improve and cross-pollination between other teams at your office. So being able to have intelligent conversations with the biz team, for instance, if you hire somebody that has a marketing background and also is a sound coder, you're getting this like amazing combination of skills, even though the person's technical skill is still, you know, like being developed.
Right. No, and I could personally like attest to that. Seeing, you know, someone like Brandon, for example, who comes from a marketing background, it's almost like you're like, wow, I had no idea that these skills even existed. And yet they map so well to software, because what it is that we're doing is we're actually solving problems for people. And like when you're out there and it turns out that people have a lot of different problems, and like it's the familiarity and intimacy with those problems is, you know, that's half the battle, if not 90% of the battle. Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that especially for people who transitioning, and I, you know, I've said it many, many times, I believe that like part of like the path to being a senior developer has nothing to do with like being technical and just being like senior, like having life experience and understanding the way that things work. And then like when you understand the way that things work, you can automate the way that things work, but you can't, it doesn't work the other way around. You can't automate them without understanding.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely,
I think it's a really good point.
That's definitely part of the advice that I would give other bootcamp grads when they would ask me for advice. I would tell them that they need to leverage something that they don't think about, which is the fact that they have experience in something else. They bring a unique perspective, a unique set of tools, and they usually don't think about that. They're more focused on the skills that they lack and what it is that they don't know in development, when really they have a lot to offer.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And, you know, another thing in our industry, particularly web development, is that the technology is changing so rapidly that even when you hire a senior developer onto your team, the likelihood that they're going to be well-versed in the entirety of the stack that you use in your environment is very slim, which means every single person that you onboard is going to have a period of getting acquainted with the code. Every single person you hire is going to have a learning curve. And if you take into account that a junior developer is going to have a steeper learning curve than a senior person, but every single person you hire is still going to have, you know, a couple weeks to a couple months of just figuring out how to be a solid contributor, the equation of I really need someone super senior today begins to like become a little bit less impactful. And you can see that what you maybe want to do is hire people that are fast learners, that are good communicators, that are, you know, self-driven and take initiative to learn new things on their own, and can therefore ramp up as quickly as, you know, a mid-level developer.
Right. Right. Well, so I guess my question is, so given that, like, you know, hiring junior people can be scary, but hiring junior people is absolutely necessary. If I've got someone who fits the criteria that you just outlined, they're, you know, they've got relevant life experience, they're a fast learner, they're a self-motivator, how is it that I set them up to actually go, to actually bridge that gap? How do I remove that risk for both parties?
Yeah, I think this is the piece of the advice that is kind of lacking in the conversation right now. I've spoken to several developers, you know, in the Austin community who are like, man, we'd really like to hire junior developers, but we just can't right now. Like, we don't have enough time. We don't have, you know, we don't know how to mentor them. And therefore, the risk is really high. But luckily, there are a lot of things that you can like automate in terms of mentoring that mean you don't have to actually have human hours dedicated to it. You just need to make sure that you're using the right tools. So things like making sure that you actually have a test suite is huge. That means a junior developer can hop in the code base, make some changes, and know whether or not they've royally screwed something up, because they get immediate feedback on whether or not the code base is still working as expected. You should have things like linters, things that help a junior developer determine whether or not the code that they're writing is clean and follows the standards that company has established as you know what they need to be following, and that cuts down significantly on things like, you know, code review time, because then your senior developers are not worried about stylistic conversations. They're worried about architecture conversations. They're worried more about the actual functionality of the code and less about how the code is structured.
Even still, you have to break a problem down for a junior developer, right? And so what kind of ecosystem do you have to foster in order to bring in a completely new junior person? And I've heard an interesting thing that it shouldn't be one senior developer and three juniors, but instead three intermediate developers can foster and mentor one junior and kind of take turns in breaking a problem apart into small pieces and really have a rotation for mentorship that goes into that. That's both a learning experience for the mid-level developer and works really well for juniors. At least that's what I've seen so far.
Yeah. I think that's something we've definitely seen here at Frontside, because, you know, for me, the pairing sessions with, you know, with you, Alex, or with Rob have actually been some of the most educational for me. I love pairing with Charles. Charles is super technical, and I do learn a ton when we're pairing together. But because Charles has so much more context than I do when approaching problems, I actually am able to retain a lot more of what we discuss when I'm working with peers or people that are just a little bit ahead of me. And so, yeah, I think it's important for companies to remember that, like, they don't need to dedicate their most senior people to mentoring positions. They need to dedicate someone that's 3 months ahead of the new hire in understanding the code base and understanding the technology.
Yeah. That's actually been one of the hardest things for me to kind of wrap my head around is, you know, all through, I would say the last like 10, 15 years of my career, the kind of the dogma and the mantra has been, you've got to be always pairing. But then coming to kind of realize, you know, as part of trying to bring, you know, more junior people up, is that a pairing where there's a large disparity between the technical skill can actually be detrimental to the learning process. And it can be So you know, if someone is kind of guiding the way too strongly, or they have in their head a very clear mental map of where exactly they're going, then that gives the experience to the person who's learning of just kind of walking along a path with somebody instead of actually trying to look at the stars, catch your location, and find out, you know, where it is that you should be, you know, what your next heading should be. And then on the same side, it can make a senior person feel like this is like, I think this is actually kind of one of the reasons that organizations can experience trouble working with, like trying to work with more junior developers is, you know, then if you have that kind of asymmetric pairing, it can feel like a drag to the person who's more senior, because really that's kind of the more junior person isn't learning anything and they're not as contributing as much. And then the other person is moving more slowly than they normally would.
Right.
And so it's not a harmonious way forward, and kind of taking the leap of, we just need to let go of pairing in some cases. Like we want to do, you know, pair on collaborative planning for a problem, but allow, you know, someone to go and kind of bang their head on something by themselves so that they can recreate those discoveries for themselves rather than just being pulled along for them is actually very critical to the whole process. And being willing and flexible to kind of let go of those kind of normal modes of work has been very eye-opening for me, I know.
Yeah, as a junior developer, I can definitely say it can be very stressful when you pair with a senior developer, because you're not just focused on the problem and trying to solve it. I tend to be very self-aware, and you get stressed out if you don't know something, or admitting that you don't know something, and then the feelings of imposter syndrome start to settle in, and now you're like, oh no, they know I'm a fraud, and now you're blocking yourself without you even realizing it. You have this mental block which doesn't allow you to learn because you're too worried about that. And I think you benefit a lot from, like you said earlier, rotating and learning different chunks from different people. I know I'm a visual learner, and I learn when I'm tackling a problem and trying to figure it out together. And instead of guiding me, you know, I understand when someone's trying to ask me rhetorical questions, but sometimes I don't see it from the same angle that that person is asking. And it's just, everyone learns differently. So I think mm-hmm. it's important to have different pairing sessions with different people on different projects, and just combine different learning mechanisms.
Yeah, I mean, I think the goal in general is to be training people to be independent contributors, right? Like, you want to make sure that the skill set that you're actually building is that people are able to be given a task and be able to figure out how to execute that task on their own. And that's one of the things that you kind of run into if what you're doing is making sure that you always have a pair for a junior developer. Because what you're telling that junior developer is, I don't trust you to do this on your own. We need to like have these training wheels in place, but then you never take the training wheels off. mm-hmm. And so that person never gets the experience of actually thinking through the entire problem on their own. And so I think a better strategy is to, instead of taking large problems and trying to bring junior developers in on your large problem and work side by side with them, maybe a better strategy is to figure out an appropriate scoped problem that is a little smaller, and let them take that and run with them all on their own. Most people that come out of a boot camp should feel real confident about, for instance, fixing styling bugs, or, for instance, taking something that already exists in the code base and tweaking it and replicating it, like adding some tests around things, or adding a feature that's very similar to something else that already exists in the code base, something where there's a good pattern already there that they can follow. But that they can actually take and apply all on their own without a whole lot of guidance. And then the actual mentoring comes in when you have someone review your code and offer feedback.
I actually want to go back to the planning phase. I'm really interested in that. I want to know what is this problem that we're trying to break down, and how do you communicate it, and how far back do you go in explaining why is this a problem for, in our case, UI design, right? I'm building a nested popover. It has a couple of events firing. Why has this been hard in the history of UI? And in our case, we use Ember. So why is Ember good today? And really going through that full problem set and giving a junior developer a true understanding of why this has been hard, of why what I'm doing is an engineering problem and a UI challenge, and then the road for how they're going to solve it. Like, that's what's most beneficial whenever I tackle a problem, is if I understand how far back it goes and say the history of UI.
I think understanding the problem is like, you know, that is 90% of the solution, is just replicating the knowledge in your own mind before you ever like touch the keyboard. And so having that planning session and generating that context, that's the focus, right? That's as opposed to like learning some particular coding skill or anything like that, but the way in which you attack a problem. And I think that applies. I think that applies whether you're a junior developer or whether you're, you know, at the very end of your career. It's just the depth and the scope of the knowledge that you're mining is different, but it's the mining of that knowledge that's the most important part. And so that's the skill, right, I think, that you want to teach. I think, is that what you're getting at? Is like you're trying to understand deeply the problem that you're trying to solve, even if you've narrowed the scope of that to a very small degree. Or are you saying like you really, even with that small scope, you want to dig really, really deep into that context?
I personally want to dig deep into that context. Yeah. Right. If someone's like, hey, can you solve this? Right. They're dropping you wherever you find yourself, right? They're not telling you where to begin. They're just telling you what the end product is going to look like. And that's not particularly helpful at the beginning stages of any type of engineering problem.
Right. So it sounds to me like what you're looking for is someone to be like, you need to be willing to answer any question and go on, you know, be very, very flexible on how far of like a tangent you'll go to like explain the problem. It's like, why do we do this? Well, because of this. Well, why that? Well, because of this. And and trying to just, you know, be really willing to satisfy that need for context. Is that?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what makes for a good meetup talk or what makes for a good conference talk? It's having a good solid introduction that reminds somebody what is the problem. And then later on, you're going to solve it for them, right? But a junior developer, they don't have the context of what the actual problem is. They haven't been solving problems long enough in this space. So give them that introduction as to what the problem is and what the pain in this application is and where you may have felt it before as a more senior or intermediate developer.
Right. It's funny. I find it's so problem solution. I find this popping up a lot in terms of, you know, Stephanie, you and I were having this conversation today, like of what makes a good pull request.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, the best description of pull request is say what the problem is and then say what your solution is. But like forcing yourself to actually state the problem really crystallizes your understanding of the solution, or really guides your understanding of the solution. And it sounds so obvious to say, but we're so often, you know, we're so eager to rush off to solutions that we don't stop to focus on the problem. And the same thing applies whether you're writing a pull request, whether you're writing some documentation, whether you're writing a README for, you know, your GitHub repo. I could talk all day.
Yeah.
That actually, that does remind me of like another tool that I think is really important for you to have in your development pipeline before you attempt to bring on junior developers, which is some means of documenting a backlog. Like you need a ticketing system or something, something reliable where people have compiled a list of things from small to large with enough detail and enough context for someone to be able to pick up and run with it. And I think that particularly for smaller or newer companies, this is the piece that is usually missing, because usually you have like a pretty short communication, feedback loop. And so a lot of it is like living in someone's brain. But what happens is that then the tasks that a junior developer could be running with and actually be making like a huge impact on the code base with is all siloed in someone else's brain who's busy with other things. And so if you can find a means of like extracting that information from whoever the keeper of those like list of things that needs to be done and put them down on paper, then you have a situation where a junior developer can then decide for themselves what they think an appropriate scoped project is. And it encourages them to go out and try something that's a little outside of their comfort zone. And it means that they can do those things without taxing the time of people that are busy doing other things.
Right. And it does. It implies a lot of work on, you know, the people who are going to be generating that backlog. But I think that it's not fair to say, like, you, it's a big investment, but the payoff is really huge. Because if you actually take the time to really document and kind of transfer that knowledge into a more permanent location where people can pop it off the queue, then, you know, that's work that can actually get done, you know, magically, so to speak. Like, you can actually, you know, you can properly delegate it. You know, not only is someone using this work as a means to learn and level themselves up, but the work is getting done, which means it's less work that you have to do. So, you know, the benefit can be absolutely huge.
And even just from a cognitive load perspective on, you know, senior people that are keeping track of all of these things in their brains, like, it's actually beneficial to you, even if you didn't have a whole lot of team members, to be able to write these things down and then prioritize them. So it's actually a useful tool that you should maybe start with at the very beginning, but it is one of the things that's sort of an afterthought once you suddenly discover that you're coordinating, you know, five people's workload instead of two. But if you start with it at the beginning, then you have, you know, this ongoing history, both that someone can dig through and understand the context of how this piece of software came to be the way it is, and also for them to find stuff to do. Because the biggest source of frustration I've found for junior developers is when they feel like they don't know what they should be doing. Because there's, you know, this pressure to be contributing as fast as possible. And unfortunately, for most junior developers, that is a piece where someone needs to provide a little bit of guidance. And if you can wrap some structure around how that guidance is provided, and it's not something where I need you to come sit with me for an hour to describe this problem to me, it's something that can be pulled off a ticket list. And I already know that it's, you know, an appropriately sized thing for me to work on for a couple of days. Then that saves everybody time and effort.
Right. I think it's also, you know, I think an important tool that we've just started employing is making sure that for each one of these tasks, there's like a time box, like not like it needs to be completed by this time, but don't go past this point without kind of saying, okay, I need some further context, or I need some more help with this. So, because I think another thing that's like a skill that you kind of have to develop is understanding how long a task, you know, quote unquote, should take, or whether like when you're stuck or when you're actually stuck. I don't know if I'm saying it quite right, but I hope you guys all know what I'm talking about, where it's like, you don't really, without having been exposed to enough of the problems, it's hard to gauge like the difficulty. And like, am I skiing down a black diamond, or is this like a, you know, is this the green where I just happen to get off on a trail, to use a skiing analogy? I don't know if like that might fall flat. But, you know, on the difficulty scale, on the kind of the absolute difficulty scale, where does this lie? Like, is this a really hard problem that I'm just going to have to like bang at for 3 days? Or is it like something where I just, you know, I didn't enter the right Stack Overflow search, and so I didn't, the answer didn't just pop up on my screen.
It's hard to raise that red flag, right? Because you're learning when you're doing it.
Exactly.
I think it's nobody needs to like come in and help me right now, but you know.
Right. So I think it's important for the more senior people to put that time box and say, for this problem, you know, let's just put a time box of 1 day or 3 days around it, and we'll check in Yeah. If you're not satisfied with your solution in 3 days.
I think that really helps you narrow down the scope of problems too. Because if you're thinking about it in terms of, okay, someone should be able to pick this up and run with it and be done with it in 2 to 3 days. That means you've had to take a larger, broader problem and break it down into small enough pieces that you can describe what needs to be done in 2 or 3 days. I've definitely seen tickets that are like, implement a billing system. And you're like, well, I don't really know.
As a user, yeah. I'd like to bill.
Yeah. Or implement transactional emails, and that's too broad. And unfortunately, when you're a junior developer, it's hard to recognize exactly when you've received one of those things, and you end up falling down terrible rabbit holes and then feeling terrible about yourself that you can't solve the problem. And what's actually happened is that the problem was not well defined to begin with. So if you use this time boxing strategy and you say, I, as someone with a little bit more experience and clarity on what this problem is, think that this should take about 2 to 3 days. That means you've already done the work of breaking down the problem into small enough pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No.
So I think that the other piece of this is that junior developers are so eager to be placed in their first job, particularly bootcamp grads. I might talk specifically about bootcamp grads here, but that you're so eager to get placed in your first job that you forget that you are also responsible for vetting the company as to whether or not it's going to be a good fit for you. And I think part of that is that, again, it's not something that's well-defined right now. I don't think that's information that's shared with junior developers that often of what they should be looking for in a new company. Did you guys
get that at your code school? Was there any element of that? Or was it just like, hey, we're going to get you a job, but they didn't talk about like...
It was essentially, we're going to give you enough of an education, like barely enough for you to get your foot into a door and somebody will hire you. Like, and it may take... Up to 3 months is what is typically promised, at least in Austin, just speaking from Austin's perspective.
Mm-hmm. But there are so it does sound like things that you need to demand or things that you need to be looking for in a company was absent from the conversation.
Yes, it was absent.
I think it was, yeah. And honestly, it took me a couple of tries to figure it out. I worked at a couple of different jobs, and I'm happy to report that I now know what my personal criteria are for finding a good fit for myself. And it is going to be a little bit different for everybody. But in terms of making sure that you're landing at a place that, is invested in mentoring, actually sees the value of you being there and contributing, and has all the pieces already in place to make sure that you can come in and be a solid contributor on day one, is something that doesn't really come up in the, you kind of do interview prep, but the interview prep is a lot of like, stand in front of a whiteboard and like do some algorithm problems and let me prepare you for this technical interview scenario. And to be honest, I didn't even have a really technical interview until I had been a developer for maybe 2 years. Most of my initial interviews were more cultural fit because I lucked out and was able to find companies that were already aware of what they were getting with a junior developer, what they should be specifically screening for. And while it's great that you can prove that, you have the right kind of mathematical mind to do, algorithmic calculations and things like that, what you really want to be like vetting for is how fast someone learns, how they handle it when they run into a wall and don't know how to solve a problem, what resources they use to try and solve the problem on their own. Those are the things that I think employers should be screening for more in initial interviews. And that was actually something that I have now used as my criteria during the interview process to determine whether or not that's going to be a good fit for me is actually how that company is structuring their interview. If I walk into an interview and, it's 5 hours of technical drills and tests, that's probably not a company that's prepared to offer the kind of support that I need right now. If I walk in and what they want to do is they want to pair with me and they want to actually see how I solve a real world problem, that's great. If I walk into an interview and they say, hey, we're going to have this, kind of cultural fit conversation, see you know, how you think about problems, and then I'm going to send you home with something that we want you to execute on your own, I think that's a really strong option as well. Because that means I get to use my own tool set, I get to use my own timeline, and actually be able to really show them what I'm able to produce in a short amount of time.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's actually something we rely almost entirely on the in-office interview and the conversation. We have a pretty good idea of what someone's about before they come in. But I like that idea of you know, allowing someone. I mean, we've started having part of that in-office interview be working on one of their problems, but I actually really like the idea, but it's still, the problem is it's still in our space and it's on our timeline. And I like the idea of giving someone essentially not all the time in the world, but allowing them to work on their own schedule with their own tools to produce an artifact, which is ultimately, you know, that's the empirical measure of how they're going to perform. Mm-hmm. Or it's a very good indicator. I should say.
But these hiring strategies are still like relatively new. It seems like progressive companies seem to be the ones doing these things. Traditionally, you would just find a job online, you know, drop your resume and hope that they call you back. And then, yeah, if you get called back, then you go in and you do the 5-hour grilling.
Man, those are so brutal. This is a funny story from like back early in my career. I got subjected to one of these like 5-hour grillings. And then like the last hour was just, they put me in a room with like this person who's like, I don't know, there was something about the shape of his head that was just like, I couldn't stop. And I just wanted to like laugh, and I was like, it was so like totally like inappropriate, but I was so exhausted like by this stupid interview process that like I completely and totally flubbed, you know, that last hour like interview. And yeah, it was like so silly. Anyway,
I think another really good option that I'm seeing larger companies, so like enterprises, are using to hire junior developers is that they have interns, or they have classes of interns. And so this is something that I've seen in a couple of companies in Austin that is actually seeming to prove like pretty effective. And usually the classes are combinations of bootcamp grads and also CS grads from local universities. And they come in for, you know, a summer program or whatever. It's, you know, 2 months with the opportunity to be hired full time afterwards. But there's, you know, some of the training is distributed between multiple hires all at the same time. But then you get the advantage of working side by side with these people. And that is one of the things that will most quickly like relieve the fear and the stress of taking on a junior developer is if you've actually solved a problem with them. Mm-hmm. Which is why I think pairing is also a good option in an interview setting. But you know, having these sort of slightly more formal options for larger companies. Smaller companies, that's just not going to work very well. But for larger companies, if there's something where they can take a slightly mitigated risk and just give someone a chance, it's a great way to like kind of negotiate this contract between employer and junior developer where both sides get an opportunity to show themselves in the best light.
So you mean like having sort of like provisional employment?
Yeah.
I've seen that in the form of contract to hire a lot.
So I've actually been really curious about that because I've always seen it as kind of being unfair to the potential contract to hire person. It's kind of like, hey, take yourself off the job market, because this is actually something that I've been very interested in and something that I think that we might be willing to do even as a small company. But is it fair to this person to be like, hey, stop your job search. Come work with us for 6 weeks. And we might just, you know, give you the boot after that. Is that enough risk? Is it a reasonable amount of risk to ask the presumptive employee to assume?
I think that because the problem right now is just getting in the door for junior developers, this is like a reasonable compromise. If it were, say, an unpaid internship, I would maybe have a problem with that. And if the situation was that you were in a highly competitive, you know, group of 20 where there was only one spot actually available, that would be a different situation. But in the companies that I've seen be successful with this, they take on the people with the assumption that they might hire all of them. And so it's frequently larger companies that, you know, are trying to rapidly expand their engineering team and that also have the means to actually have a more formalized training program with an actual dedicated resource who is a trainer, things like that. But, you know, they bring someone on board, they familiarize them with their stack, particularly for enterprises where you're probably working with lots of custom technology. It's actually super beneficial to them to be able to like actually bring people in and train them up on their stack. And then as soon as the program is over and the kind of conditional hire is over, that also means that those people are like released into the workforce on their team with exactly the skills that they need to contribute on day one.
Yeah, I think it can be mutually beneficial. You just have to make it beneficial for both parties. It has to be paid. Hopefully it's more than 6 weeks, maybe like 3 months or I don't know, maybe even 5 months. That way it goes both ways. If, for example, the employee doesn't particularly like the place, it's kind of a sense of relief to not have to quit and say, oh, well, you know, in 5 months, I can just say, you know, this isn't really working out for me. But at least you're walking out the door with some form of skills and experience that you picked up along the way. And you also get to see what kind of environment you would like to work in, because sometimes things look very different from the outside. And then once you actually start working there, you see a completely different perspective of what the company really is like. And then it sucks. Now you're locked into this thing for the next, you know, 3 years, because it looks bad if you quit and find another job. I believe it can be mutually beneficial for both parties.
And if you're a boot camp grad and someone says, hey, I know you just paid a ton of money for 3 months of education, how about we pay you for 3 months of education? You're like, yeah, I'll definitely take that.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point too.
Right. I guess it makes a lot more sense if the person is at kind of the outstart of their development career. Like it wouldn't make sense. I guess I've been thinking it would make sense if someone was like a, you know, 5 years into their career.
No, or, definitely yeah. not. Yeah. But if what you're doing is trying to help with the on-ramp problem, mm-hmm. I think it's a totally viable option.
I see. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right. Well, man, this has been a fantastic conversation. I can certainly say, as someone who 2 years ago thought that like hiring junior developers was like the road to perdition, and just, or not, I wouldn't say that like it was a guaranteed like flop. It was just like so much stress and so much fear about it. Having seen like my mind kind of come around 180 degrees and realize that it can be something that is, yes, requires a lot of work, but has an enormous benefit. And actually bringing and leveling people up can actually increase the velocity of your team. And actually, you know, make you more productive if you're willing to invest in that backlog and willing to invest in that, you know, the work of actually having a mentorship program and having a ladder upwards. It certainly, from my perspective, has been very, very eye-opening. And like I said, it's hard to believe that so many of the people who've come through here have come straight from a code school.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a topic that's like near and dear to my heart for obvious reasons, and something that I'll probably continue talking about and writing about for quite a while, because I think that there's still huge gaps that need to be filled in terms of like support around this process.
Yeah.
But I've seen so many success stories, particularly in Austin, that it definitely seems like something that people are taking seriously and consider worthwhile. And I, for one, am like very thankful for the opportunity that I've had coming out of a code school and, you know, finding some wonderful companies that are willing to take a chance on me and, you know, willing to believe that I have something to offer.
Yes. You have something to offer, and like I can look at like each one of you and
5:30.
Gin time. All right. Cut that. Scratch that. But seriously, Alex, Lydia, Stephanie, like, it's not just a one-way street, is I guess the point that I want to make, is that, like, you guys have actually not only had something to offer, but had been able to make major contributions to actually change the fabric of the company. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen
you become a better engineer in the year and a half absolutely. That I've been here.
Absolutely.
And that's cool. That's a absolutely. Cool feeling for us.
Absolutely. No, it is – that is – there are many things that I have doubt about, but that I personally have become a better developer and that this shop has become a better shop because each of you has worked here is like – I can say that and know that it's 100% true.
That's awesome.
Like that's an assertion that I'm willing to make. Mm. And yeah, it's a assertion that I'm willing to make and that I feel good making. And I hope that, you know, other people can feel good about making that assertion later too. All right, y'all. Let's you guys have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, you too, Charles. Bye, everybody.
Bye.